Hello there. You're very welcome to Burning Books with me, Ruth McKee, editor of Books Ireland. Joining me today, I have novelist and short story writer Olivia Fitzsimons, whose debut novel, The Quiet Whispers Never Stop, is just published with John Murray.
So I'd like to talk about your early days, Olivia, and bring you back to when you were a small child. And if there's a book you remember either reading yourself or a book that you remember someone reading to you.
So there weren't a lot of books in my house, but I actually went hoking in my head. Some books that I find that made me laugh. I have I have a real fondness. It sounds weird, even though I'm not religious, for the Bible, but I think that's because it was drummed into us. And I found this morning. It's the Rosary for Children. So I had a reread. This is in my library. And I was like, oh, my God. In it, very interestingly, there's a little intro and it says there are three sets of stories to think about while you pray the rosary: five joyful stories, five sorrowful stories, and five glorious stories. And then it goes on and says people usually pray the joyful stories on Mondays and Thursdays, the sorrowful stories on Tuesdays and Fridays, and the glorious stories on Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Some people pray all three sets of stories in a single day.
Oh, I love it.
So I was like, oh my God, no wonder I kind of went for the high drama very early, if that's the introduction to.
So what are we today? We're Friday today, so sorrowful story.
Sorrowful story on Friday.
Oh my God. But you're saying the Bible, so was the Bible read to you? Like did either
my family was very religious, so and I would have actually read a mass church, so I would have every Sunday, well, from when I was little, I would have done readings, and so I was very familiar with, you know, the Bible. And actually, and my school gave us all a copy of the Bible, which I still have. Like,
oh my goodness,
like this is I don't know, obviously people can't see, but it's the Good News Bible. And I remember just thinking to myself, wow, like we got, you know, and I brought it with me, even though I didn't believe it. So strange. I think it was just because someone gave me a book and I was delighted.
It's funny, isn't it? And Kit DeWall was talking about that kind of hardwiring, you know, like you have those like rhythms and passages that just sort of lodge in there, like the pentameter of it and all of that. And do you remember like particular passages or anything, or is it just something that's kind of seeped
in? There's like I do, and especially because I used to read things, you know, like read out loud at mass and church and stuff. So I would, you know, it's really interesting because it's such like there's four people telling the stories, you know, and there's all the different points of view. And I just think, like, even though I don't believe anymore and stuff, it's the theatre of that space.
Yeah.
You know, like midnight mass would have been properly at midnight, and the smell and the sense of being in the church. And, you know, the church that I went to, we moved from a small village to the countryside when I was seven. And it was, you know, it was women on one side, men on the other, and then all the men smoking outside the church, you know, in the door, like chat. And so it was very theatrical. The people wore mantillas. There's a real spectacle about that stuff.
Yeah.
And sometimes I miss that thing, you know, because I think it introduces you in some ways to so many different stories and kind of parables, but also it's the theatre of going of that, you know. Like I'm not a big fan of religion, but I like the story. I think the stories are it's very interesting, the things that you get told. And, you know, but also it's obviously clearly propaganda. when you read some of it, you're like, oh, okay.
It's true, isn't it? And you say, you know, in the same sort of bracket there, you've mentioned Hans Christian Andersen, you know, Fables of another Dimension. Like did you have a little volume of Hans Christian Andersen? Like I'm thinking back to like those little illustrated
we really didn't have many books, but I think we might have had those kind of, you know, the goats and the kids, those kind of little books. My grandmother was a great storyteller on my mother's side, and she was great for stories. A great, you know, Halloween, we'd all sit around the fire, and she'd make like soda bread on one of those. She lived in an old farmhouse, and she'd tell stories, and, you know, all that kind of banshee, and she was wonderful like that. But I remember the Hans Christian Andersen story, so we must have had some kind of volume that someone gave us. But I got a new one for my kids with them, and it's funny because, you know, the stories are obviously quite violent, right? And like the proper ones.
Yeah.
And this is what I got for them. And I remember one day my son coming back from school and saying, "Mom, like, you know, other people in other people's stories, like, there's nobody cutting, there's no axe man like cutting open things and pulling people out." I was like, "Oh, really?" And he's like, "No one gets drowned in the river. Like, they don't know about this stuff. It's all happy endings." And I was like, "Listen, son, that's not how life works.
No,
it's not a bad idea." But so I was all like, "Oh, I'm sorry." But I really do love those stories, and I love the kind of, you know, they're so vivid and interesting. Yeah. And I kind of like, it's really nice actually to sit and read those to my kids and kind of reintroduce me to stuff. And I'm really fond of like lots of like children's literature. I think when I was small, probably I had like, I remember like The Tiger That Came to Tea and Mog, you know, Megan Mog. So like, those are the kind of books I remember, but I don't really think I had my own proper books until I was a teenager, like really until school. You know, I got a lot of books in school. School was kind of, secondary school was where I got my real love.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, like, what kind of a reader did you turn into? Because in some ways you don't have a whole lot of choice when you're tiny. It's that kind of period when you start sort of like navigating for yourself. So what kind of reader did you turn into then?
So libraries were really important to me. Like, I loved going to the library and getting books out of the library, and often things that I probably wasn't allowed. I think I just remember like, like things that would have been... the school would have been like, "No, you're not reading that," like Flowers in the Attic, or
Flowers in the Attic.
Yeah.
Oh, or my God,
that was a huge book. I remember.
I couldn't even remember the cover of that.
Yeah, God, I know.
Reading.
I know. Yeah. It was wild. But a lot of stuff, like, I loved at school, it was lots of Shakespeare and lots of plays and Arthur Miller I was really, and school introduced me to William Faulkner, and I The Sound and the Fury was a book that I read and was like, whoa, because he did things in that book that I hadn't seen before, you know, and I just found that like it really kind of broadened my reading taste. You know, I would have been like, I'd never read anything like it. And I still have this really battered copy. It's falling apart, basically.
I've never read it. So there you go. Yeah. That's on my list now.
It was published in 1929. Like, you know, it's just, when you think about it, like, I love the idea that somebody wrote this so long ago and it found me, you know. I think that's so incredible. That's a wonderful thing about books. Like, someone wrote a book in 1929 and then it spoke to a teenage girl in Northern Ireland in like 1992. Like, it is
incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a magic in that, you know, like, it's really, I don't know, like, if other art forms, of course they do, but it's just really incredible. Like, you know, a book that was set in, you know, America in the South and in a certain time, like, that really spoke to me. It's just, I love the power in that. I think it's just wonderful.
There is a kind of magic, really, isn't there, when you think about it like that? It is, it's just that the chances, the probability of it is just so, odds are just incredible.
So
I know. And it's like someone speaking to you from the, not from the dead, but you know, it's just that ephemeral thing that just reaches you, boom.
Yeah, it's an echo from the past and it reaches out to you. And I love the idea that, like, you know, when he wrote that, like, he would have just been like, probably like any one of us, just sitting in a room writing and no idea where it was going to go, or, you know, the reach that the book would have. Maybe he was like, I know this is gonna, but it's that, it's the maybe that's just a female thing, but I just love the idea that you know, books can kind of have a life way past, you know, when they were created, and they can affect people who the author will never know. It's amazing.
This is such a beautiful point, and I'm going to make a really mundane point after that. It's like, echoes from the past, and now I'm going to say, did you ever read it again? But did you ever go back to it since?
I have, and then I was kind of like, oh,
did it ruin it?
This is the interesting thing. Like, you read things, and then you think, oh, okay, you know, and it changes. The book changes, and. You can see maybe some of the things that you missed the first time around when you're a little bit older. And, you know, but I mean, I'm like, there's a lot of books I didn't read. So, you know, that's the other thing that I'm kind of discovering authors. I think there was a real British American sensibility to my schooling. And like, a lot of Irish authors would have bypassed me, you know, because we were, I mean, like, it's terrible to say this, but like, you know, I hadn't read Edna until really recently. And now I'm like, I love her so much. She's so amazing, which sounds like it sounds like crime. But like, you know, I just wasn't introduced to those kind of writers. And a lot of the writers that when I was younger would have been men. Like there were so many men, you know, it was a really male driven view of the world that I was given. And I think there was Jennifer Johnson, but that was probably it. Like, it's crazy.
I think it's the same for me. Jennifer Johnson, I think, was one of the only.
But when you think about it, you're like, what? You know, we never questioned it because we just didn't know any better. But it's a shock, you know. So I'm remedying that, obviously. But like, it is a shock, you know, because when I looked at my choices, I was like, oh, look at all the men.
Look at all the
all the Americans and all the Brits.
But it's funny, the one really interesting thing about this podcast I've found is that, you know, everybody has everyone has massive gaps. You know, I have massive gaps. Mm-hmm. People are coming on and, you know, they list books that I have never, you know, the entire works of somebody that I've never even touched. You know, it's just vast, you know. So there's obviously going to be, you know, and I think there's no reason to feel bad about it in a way too, because you just come to a book whenever you come to a book, and whether it's when you're 20, 30, 40, 50, you know, doesn't matter.
I think that's why it's so nice to get recommendations from people, or that feeling when you discover a writer and you're like, oh my God, you read everything they've ever written and you're so excited and you want to tell everybody. You're like, oh my God, you have to read this person, you know, and like, that's really wonderful. And I just, you know, there's something like about finding those books that call out to you and kind of, I don't know, like, or if someone, I always feel really affinity if someone recommends something to me that I love, and then I'm always like, thank you so much. You know, it's like being given a really wonderful gift. It's really good.
And also that someone knows you well enough to know the kind of book that's going to speak to you. You know, that's tricky. That's like getting someone a painting, or, you know, you need to know the person quite well to know what's going to work for them, or going to sit with them.
And what's lovely about that is that, like, you know, sometimes with a piece of work, like when I was writing The Quiet Whispers Never Stop, Fiona Riley recommended Death and the Nightingales by Eugene McCabe to me, and I'd never read it, and it opened up something, and it was the perfect book at the perfect time, you know. And and I was really fortunate that I got a quote from the book for an epigraph in the novel. And do you mind if I read it to you? I was so grateful to get this because the book really opened things for me. It runs this, do I want any of this, the heartbreak of this place, love it and hate it like no place else on earth. And that's from Death and Nightingales. And it's about the north, and the book was written so long ago, but I think it still kind of rings true for me, you know. And it kind of became a tenet of what I was trying to do with the book. So I just, I love when people know what you need to be reading. You know, they help you along in your journey as a writer and a reader. It's great. It's really generous.
Yeah. And that's oh goodness, that's like poetically satisfying and beautiful that you had that journey at the same time, and then you got the epigraph. Yeah. And just what we were talking about there, you know, about going back to The Sound and Fury and maybe it being a bit different when you've revisited it later on. You mentioned a book here that you go back to that has people divided. like you can see it all the time. Either people are raving about it, or there's like, oh, I don't see what everyone's on about. And it's The Goldfinch. So tell me like why you would go back to the Goldfinch and Donna.
I'm not a crier. Like, I don't cry in books. It's very rare. So hard northerner than I am, but so when I do, like when I get emotionally attached, it's that way. It's quite, you know, and that's one of the few books that made me cry the first time I read it and the second time, and I thought, oh my God, you know. And when I reread it, I just thought to myself, like, it was during lockdown actually, and I just there's something about it that just transported me. Her sentences, I loved Donna Tartt. I think she's a genius. And that book, I think, you know, the character is so self-sufficient, but also doesn't always have to be. And it kind of breaks my heart, you know. But I'm so drawn to that, like, that kind of outsider, that description of loneliness, but even when he's surrounded by people, but also... Yeah. I just think her prose is just stunning, and she really she really makes you feel, you know, for me anyway, like she moves you to a place and it's so expertly done. And it's almost like you don't realize that she's kind of, you know,
yes,
drawing you along. It's so clever. And, you know, I it's a big old book, like, but I read it the last time in a day. Like I really don't get this very often, but I had a day and I just read the whole thing from morning. And it was so satisfying to read it again and love it just as much again.
I'm glad to hear that.
Oh, it just, it was so, yeah. And I was just like, haters be gone. This is a wonderful book. It's a masterpiece.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that you went back, because I've read it once and loved it, but then wondered whether it was one of those things that, you know, the book came at the right point and blah, blah, blah. You know, it was just because sometimes that happens. And I almost don't want to go back and read it again because I don't want to ruin it, you know, because it was like that. It was like an immersive kind of, and like you say, very softly, you don't realize it's happening. And then all at once you're just,
you're bereft.
Yeah. So, but it kind of like, is it repeatable? But it's good to hear that, like, you read it again and had the same.
And you know, and that's the thing, you know, I don't know if it was because I was in a particular mood when I read it again. I mean, it's really interesting. Like, I had this thing recently where I rewatched Sunshine. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And whenever that first came out, I hated that film. Like, I just, I spent my time saying, oh my God, this is awful. And I would argue why I didn't like it and whatever. I watched it again. I was like, this is amazing. And I just was like, what was going on with me that I had such an awful adverse reaction? So I do think it can depend what's happening. Really, it's actually not, I think, I know it depends what happens in your life, the way you respond to different pieces of art, because if it catches you at the wrong moment or the right moment, it will set off something in you that's really, it's hard to replicate again. And, you know, I think that some things speak to you and then they either continue that conversation or they don't. And, but we should be grateful even if we get things at a certain time, you know, it doesn't have to repeat it. But for me now, yeah, the goldfinch, it works.
It works. Okay.
It works all the time.
I might go back. I don't know. So, is there anything, there's another writer here that close to my heart as well that you go back to, but in particular a short story collection or a short story in particular?
Like I love Raymond Carver. I always have. And I actually, I've got I think the first one I was given was Where I'm Calling From, this big old tome. And I love all his stories, but I have one of my my favorite story is Why Don't You Dance? And I just think he's like, I never fail to learn something when I reread the work. Do you know that way? And it has a real place in my heart. I just really love Carver. And if I'm having a bad day, or if I'm, you know, poetry is kind of the same to me. Like I have poetry all over the house. I have poetry, you know, there's a whole big section behind me. There's poetry, always a poetry book in my handbag or in the car, and I get poems, you know, work for the kids as well. Like, so I find sometimes that these are the kind of things that can kind of anchor you if you're having a bit of a hard time. Like if you come back to this story, and I think this is actually a really quite a perfect story, actually, Why Don't You Dance? And there's just,
I was going to say, is there a little segment of that you could read for us?
I could, yeah, if you want me to. This is kind of towards the end. I might just read it's kind of towards the end. So for people who don't know the story, it's a man who's basically put out all the things of his house onto his yard, and he set up basically like his bedroom, and he's got like a record player and everything outside the house for sale. And a girl and a boy drive past and they stop and they think it's a yard sale and they decide to have a look because it's very unusual. The man finished his drink and poured another, and then he found the box with the records. "Pick something," the man said to the girl, and he held the records out to her. The boy was writing the check. "Here," the girl said, picking anything, for she did not know the names on these labels. She got up from the table and sat down again. She did not want to sit still. "I'm making it out to cash," the boy said. "Sure," the man said. They drank. They listened to the record. And then the man put on another. "Why don't you kids dance?" he decided to say. And then he said it. "Why don't you dance?" "I don't think so," the boy said. Go ahead, the man said. It's my yard. You can dance if you want to. Arms about each other, their bodies pressed together, the boy and the girl moved up and down the driveway. They were dancing. When the record was over, they did it again. And when that one ended, the boy said, I'm drunk. The girl said, you're not drunk. Well, I'm drunk, the boy said. The man turned the record over and the boy said, I am. Dance with me, the girl said to the boy and then to the man. When the man stood up, she came to him with her arms wide open. Those people over there, they're watching, she said. It's okay, the man said. It's my place, he said. Let them watch, the girl said. That's right, the man said. They thought they'd seen everything over here, but they haven't seen this, have they? He said. He felt her breath on his neck. I hope you like your bed, he said. The girl closed and then opened her eyes. She pushed her face into the man's shoulder. She pulled the man closer. You must be desperate or something, she said. Weeks later, she said, the guy was about middle-aged, all his things right there in his yard. No lie. We got real pissed and danced in the driveway. Oh my God, don't laugh. He played us these records. Look at this record player. The old guy gave it to us. All these crappy records, but you look at this shit. She kept talking. She told everyone. There was more to it, and she was trying to get it talked out. After a time, she quit trying.
You sort of wonder why you bother after that.
And you're like, okay.
It's just, and I don't know, it's so hard to put your finger on what it is as well. It's just, yeah.
It's the simplicity in it and the emotion he, like, or space.
It's this, I was about to use that word, space. It's what's not there. It's all the, everything that isn't being said. It's just.
Yeah, which is so, you know, I'm kind of, and that sparse kind of prose. Mm-hmm. And also the dialogue, I think is really great. Like if you're struggling with dialogue, because so much is said without saying everything, you know, it's.
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
No, it has kind of intensity of its own. And I love at the end, like, I think his observations, like that idea that she talked so much about it, she was trying to get it talked out, but she wasn't saying what she really happened. Yeah. And it's so fascinating to me that that's that sense you get right at the end. And it's not, there's no big drama, there's no big fireworks. It's, but you're left just feeling like, okay, everybody knows what he's talking about. You know, you get the sense. But it's like he doesn't have to say it. He just says she took, you know, it's, I can't even say it. Like, he just, I know, so much better.
It's, you know, you can't, it's just so hard to articulate. But I love, too, what you're saying about his writing. I mean, and everyone has their personal taste with the style of writing. But I love unfussy language. I like clean, beautiful, clear, you know, like the less fussy it is. To me, the more accomplished the writer, you know, that almost you notice it but you don't notice it, you know, his writing. You know what I mean? It's just, but he's awesome. I agree.
I love him.
So I know, like a lot of people on the podcast, you're not going to leave any books in there to burn, and that's fine. I mean, it's like, what am I doing asking writers which book would you leave in there to burn? It's a hard one.
I mean, although I did think if my book didn't sell, they might have a bonfire in London for all the books that didn't sell. My editor was like, I was like, so what happens if your book doesn't sell? She was like, sorry, what do you mean? I was like, do you burn them? And she was like, no. a vision of London, London editors like crying and throwing books into a fire. I think I went too northern there on that roof.
I was going to say, yeah.
She's like, calm down, that's not what happens.
But you are going to, well, you had down in your notes here that you're going to save your children, but we're not going to get into like human beings and animals and things like that to save from the fire. Okay. So, you know, it's more like sort of sentimental objects and
stuff. Okay. You see, because I was saving them because I've done a future bookshelf for my kids. So I've kind of done this thing where, because I didn't have very many books as a child, I've collected books for them for when they're older.
Oh well, so sorry, stop you there a second. So this is for when they grow up, basically. Yeah. You have
So I get and obviously it was a bit hard, but I get an authors to sign them for me. So they're books that that mean something to me, or someone who's very good to me, or there's some connection. And so they're signing them and leaving little messages for the boys. And so when they're older, they can kind of connect to me or to what was happening in my life or to other writers through that. So I'm trying to do that. So that's why I was like, I'm going to pick up the kids there, but their arms will be full of books and they'll like, we can read them while the house burns to the ground. But yeah, no,
that's a brilliant idea. The bookshelf is a brilliant idea. Yeah, it's lovely.
It's to have some kind of, because I think, you know, you don't know what's going to happen in life, but also I think it would be nice for them to see what influenced me, and they'll get to see, you know, they'll get to see a side of me that, that maybe they don't know now. And well, they do, they know, but you know, they'll get to see what I liked. And also I've always written on their books. So they get books for like Christmas. We have a wonderful bookshop here called Halfway down the stairs in Greystones, a wonderful kids bookshop. And I get books. Some of they have this special kind of secret delivery, so they get once a month, it's for Christmas present, they get these books delivered and they don't know what they're going to get. But I had to write like a little, I wrote like an essay about what they liked, and the books are so perfect, like it's amazing. Trish does an amazing job. So I was thinking as an adult, I was like, I would love that actually, for someone just to send me a surprise book every month. But I kind of write messages on their books, I always have done. So I tell them what they're doing or what's happening in the world and little phrases they use and what we've been doing, so that they have it as a little record for when they're older and they can look back, and even for me to remember stuff. And
yeah, because you forget. And that's oh my god, I think you've just put like every writer who is a parent to shame in the whole country. And I listening to this probably going, oh my god, that is so beautiful. It really is. That is awesome. And they're obviously great readers already, you know. So
they are great readers. I think the eldest one, he really wants to be a writer. He started writing his own books. He has very funny biogs at the back and blurbs. He writes, he does these hilarious, like he's like a, you know, he puts his name in and he says, you know, like where he lives and what he likes to do. And, you know, it's funny. It's very funny. They're very, they're well versed with the literary world at this stage. It's quite amazing.
Oh, and so are they. I'm sure they're very proud of you and your debut.
Yeah, I mean, I think they know a lot of other writers who, as they tell me, are much better writers than me, like Jan Carson. They're like, oh yeah, like you're not as good as her, but you can try, mum. So they're very funny. They're all like, you know, awesome. It's gas, like, but it's nice. They're readers. I think my 11-year-old's come to the stage where, you know, he might start not reading as much. You know, I think they go through a wee stage where they're just
stopped.
So I have to come to terms with that now.
Yeah, it's weird. I have like, yeah, they do go through a sort of a dip.
Yeah,
and there's a bit of a panic, you know. But
but I'm hoping they're going to come back to it.
Yeah, come back to it. So speaking of the quiet whispers never stop, do you have it to hand?
I do. Yeah,
you do. So what if you have?
I have a very short piece.
A little piece. Yeah, that would be gorgeous. Just to tell people, if they don't know already, just a tiny bit about the book, about the background of the book before you read for us.
The Quiet Whispers Never Stop is a book that's about, I suppose, difficult women surviving a difficult place. And we start with Sam in 1994, and she's 17 and she's in her final year of school. And she's got all the usual teenage stuff going on, you know, boys, drugs, music, trying to study. But she feels like an outsider, and she meets this older, jagged, magnetic man, and she starts a illicit relationship with him. And then the book moves back to like 1981, 82, and we see Sam's mother. And she is living a small life in a small place and feels very hemmed in by motherhood. And she starts an affair with a 17-year-old boy, and ultimately she leaves her family. And so the book kind of moves backwards and forwards, and we see Sam trying to deal with her mother's abandonment of the family and how that kind of reverberates in the decisions that she makes all the way through the book. And they're connected, her mother and her. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
So, yeah. Sorry, go on.
Sorry, we're doing the. I was going to say just to thank you for coming and chatting with me this morning, and to see I could talk to you all day.
Yes, yeah, it's been such a joy. It's so nice to talk to you, someone who loves books so much, and just it's wonderful. So thank you for having me. It's great.
Thank you for being here. We keep saying thank you. Thank you. So yeah, just to sort of finish off, and if we'll all settle down and have a little listen to an extract from The Quiet Whispers Never Stop.
So I have a really, when I pick books, so it's totally random, I always go to page 67 and I look and see what's written on page 67. And so I'm going to do the same with my book. I'm going to read out, it's just a small section. It's actually one of the things it's a section I really like. And it's from the character of Nulla. And it's called Sediment, Nulla, 1982. The children are like gold, and I'm the stream. Sometimes I flow away alone, but in the morning I wake up and there they are, deposited around me. One curved into my back, the other under my chin. My arms like low branches around each, entwining them to my heart. I fear for the day they don't settle with me, but slip upstream and out to the wide, wild world. I fear and I yearn for it, remembering that I want them to leave me as much as I desired them into this world. I deposit stones of discomfort and stir up the sediment of their hearts, muddy all ahead of them. But for now, they slow up my bend in the river and settle into my sides, little slips of love and want and need, until they outgrow me, are mine no longer, and we slide back into sleep.
You've been listening to Burning Books, and our guest today was author Olivia Fitzsimons. Her book, The Quiet Whispers Never Stop, is published with John Murray. See you all next time.